Her angelic face made the boy and myself feel at ease. I kissed him on the forehead and said I would see him soon. As the nurse walked away, he waved to me. "What's your name, young fellow?" I asked. "John," he shouted back. "I'll be seeing you soon, John," I reminded him. "Be good and do as they ask." He smiled, and they walked out of sight. I felt some relief knowing that the children were now being well looked after. I turned to Chan and asked if he could tell me more about where we were. "We call this the children's sphere," he said. "That is exactly what it is. Children are brought here to be educated in the ways of the higher life. Many have come here through war, such as the ones we brought. Others are here because they were not loved on Earth and can now experience maternal love. There are many other reasons I could give. The Blue Sisterhood is a special women's organization that deals with these children. The women, when on Earth, either never married or were married but childless for one reason or another. They would have made wonderful mothers, but as the opportunity passed them by, their desires followed them into this world. Here they can fully utilize their motherly instincts. There are many institutions like this one in this sphere because many thousands of children come here daily, which gives you some idea of the immensity of this sphere." "What about their parents?" I asked. "I was just coming to that," he said. "When a child dies before his parents, he is brought here for re-education. In that education, the child is allowed to go with a guardian to the earth plane to keep watch over his parents' progress. When the time is right, the family will be reunited. The ones who die during war will, with their parents, enter a transitional period. They will then be reunited in the most suitable sphere for their family's progression." "I think I understand," I said. "Do you think the nuns or nurses would mind if I looked around?" I asked. "Of course not," Chan replied. "Let me accompany you." We walked along a large, paneled corridor. Chan stopped occasionally to point out interesting parts of the cornice. Everything was remarkably well thought out, every part of the decor blended. We approached a pair of ornate paneled doors. On opening the doors, I was dumbfounded at the beauty that surrounded us. Wonderful gardens seemed to spring from the deep green grass. I have said spring because I felt it was impossible that man could have created such a cascade of color. The gardens spread for miles in every direction. Trees covered with roses and other flowering creepers enclosed the gardens. "Come," said Chan, "let us walk." We walked along a broad, grass road. I stopped several times to take in the beauty of the flowers. Groups of young children played happily in the sprawling gardens. Nuns were teaching groups of the older children. I was pleased to see that the children's education was not being neglected. Chan agreed they were getting a good education. "You're reading my thoughts again," I commented. We both smiled. We continued along the road until we came to a clearing. In the center of the clearing was a sculpture group of Jesus with outstretched arms above the heads of three children. I bent down and read the plaque beneath the statue, "Suffer little children to come unto me." How appropriate those words were. This great soul showed his love for his children, young and old, by always being open to receive them. The sculpture reminded me to ask Chan if there would be a second coming on earth. "He is already there," Chan replied, "but has not been recognized."
"What?
You mean he has been reborn?" I asked. "Yes, in an indirect way," he replied. "Chan, you're talking in riddles." "I suppose I am," he said, "but my words are true. Now let me explain. Christ is not on the cross now. His death is history. He has risen and ascended on high. The throne of grace is not the crucifix or the confessional, it is where Christ sits at the right hand of God. Those who believe in heart and the mind may ascend and dwell continually with him. But this is not the whole story. Many do not realize the Lord is within every child who is starving or being mistreated. Look into the eyes of one of these children. There you will see the Lord. Yes, he has been reborn, but he has not been recognized." We talked for some time on this subject, Then I asked Chan about what would happen to John. "He will be looked after," he said. "First, they will bathe and clothe him. Then he will rest. They do not have the worry of weaning him off food. His astral mind has already accepted his condition. In place of food for the stomach, he will be fed the food of love. In a short time he will have adjusted to his new home just as the children we saw playing. When you visit him, you will be surprised to see the change in him. We spent hours taking in the beauty of this sphere. We stopped occasionally to chat with some of the children." Chan finally indicated it was time for us to leave. 12. "I think it would be nice to have a bathe," said Chan. "I was just going to say the same thing," I replied. "Before you say anything," Chan remarked, "I have not been reading your mind." We laughed, our way of thinking was becoming unusually similar. I took a final look at the scenery before we left. On reappearing by the pool, Chan immediately undressed and entered the water. I soon followed. It was good to recharge my batteries, I felt better.
"I do as well," said Chan. "It's quite a strange feeling having someone read your innermost thoughts." Time slipped by. Chan was content to float on the water and relax. "I have a question, and I thought perhaps—" Before I could finish what I was saying, Chan replied, "Well, what is your question?"
"I was thinking about the leaders of Germany. What will happen to them when they come to this side of life?" My question must have flummoxed Chan. He stood up and placed his hand on his chin and held this pensive pose for several minutes.
"A good question," he finally said.
Chan paused again before speaking. "They will gravitate to their own level of spiritual awareness. Do keep in mind that the evil these beings have inflicted on their brothers and sisters will eventually come back to them. That is the law of karma. In God's wisdom, they will be given a chance to make amends for the cruelty they have inflicted. It will take a long time, Jim, for them to work out their karma. But, surely, these souls are beyond help," I said.
"They certainly are not," replied Chan sharply.
"I'm sorry," I said. "I did not mean to offend you." "No apologies are necessary," he replied. "You must understand that they too are God's children. Like any naughty child, they must be taught a lesson. This will be accomplished by their incarnating into certain situations, which will give them the appropriate experience. They will suffer and experience what they inflicted on others."
"It's all very complicated," I said. "I've heard about reincarnation before, but I have never understood it."
Chan replied, "I did not say they would reincarnate. I said they would incarnate, and, as you are aware, there are many states of being. The best thing to do is to go to a lecture on the subject."
"Wait a moment, I will find out when and where the next lecture is to be given."
Chan closed his eyes and went into a state of concentration. A few minutes passed before he opened his eyes and said, "A lecture is beginning shortly. If we hurry, we will be in time." We dressed, and Chan directed us by thought to the outside of a large marble building.
"Where are we?"
I asked. Chan replied, "We are standing outside one of the halls of learning. This particular hall is well known for its fine lectures. Many people come each day to study the ways of the greater life." "That is enough talking, or we will be late." We climbed several steps to two large golden doors with panels of embossed eagles with outstretched talons. I glanced around the magnificent hall, but we did not have time to take in the whole environment. Chan led me through one of the many doors that surrounded the lecture theater. The seats were set out in a circle. It reminded me of a Roman amphitheater. We were lucky to find two empty seats. I had no chance to say anything to Chan because the speaker already stood in the center of the auditorium. He was handsomely dressed in the style of a Greek philosopher. Even from where we sat, I sensed an air of respect about him. He introduced himself and went straight into the lecture. "The question, do we reincarnate? Is understood and answered in the affirmative by the seekers of spiritual truth. Others will argue vehemently against this. It has become a question that divides many minds and creates voids between parties.
This adds up to a good discussion, which should not be considered a bad thing. Unfortunately, it is reaching a stalemate. We, on the spirit plane, now feel it would be wise to introduce a further factor into the discussion. It is already known but has not been drawn into the debates. There are many layers of endeavor or planes of expression that are known and accepted by spiritual seekers: lower astral, astral, and the first to the fourth, and the true planes of spirit. The means by which entities, man, are able to pass from plane to plane is not often understood. The existence of similar planes of expression within the structure of material or manifested states of existence, earth-like, such as rocks, lichens, plants, insects, birds and animals, is totally overlooked. Another point left out of the discussion is the soul's descent through various layers before its initial incarnation as man or woman in the manifested plane of expression. You now understand that the physical expressions of matter are not life's realities. You must also grasp that it is impossible for a manifestation on one plane to pass in its entirety into the next plane for its return circuit. The bulk usually stays behind. This seems to be the difficulty for most people's understanding of the full meaning behind reincarnation. It has deliberately been made difficult for matter to pass from one plane to another, and it can only be done by the method known as spiritualization. This means that matter must reach a stage of perfection as understood by that plane before it can transmute to the next. This can only be accomplished with the aid of matter that has knowledge of how to manage the transition. This knowledge has been acquired by matter mastering the technique at an early stage. This assisting agent is called a layer of soul or higher state of expression. This principle is legion throughout all states of expression. All life forms have a higher inner self. Soul consists of a center of intensity surrounded by layers of varying degrees of attainment. That is to say, by layers of spiritualized matter which have reached a certain state of evolution and are unable to proceed further on their own abilities. In order to make further progress, the soul must serve its lower outer layers. These layers are picked up by the descending soul and outbirthed to the next lower plane of expression which the soul needs for its own fulfillment. In the orders below man, soul work is generally carried out on a group principle. The evolving essence of a particular species is held collectively by an overlord agent which is the central principle of that species from which all body matter of the species comes for each separate incarnation of that species, such as the ant, bee, plant, etc. The group soul of each branch of each species, and there are many, is, or forms part of, a layer of the overall group soul or oversoul which may not have its being in or around the planet Earth. It may be part of the soul of some other planet within our solar system. Our planet, or Mother Nature, is also a group soul. It is made up of and holds all unevolved matter which is used to make the outer body of all living things on the Earth, including man and the rocks. Even the rocks must evolve. It may take the lifetime of this solar system before its first change from rock. Until each order evolves and is able to pass into its spiritual plane, it is brought back again and again by the group soul, until it has sufficiently raised its vibrational rate to a usable level for the higher group soul to form a lower part of the next order of being. The group soul does not reincarnate. It only holds and aids the evolution of the matter of its manifestating state, for example a bird or bee. It is interesting to note that the bees not only help the flowers by pollination, but they also spiritualize the nectar by turning it into honey. All true evolution takes place within the spirit plane of the species, not on the manifested plane, and is always only a reflection of its associate soul. This process occurs on all planes of expression lower than man. Each spiritual plane is now known by its manifesting plane. The physical plane of man is an exception to this rule. He enters as an individual on this plane of expression. Having said that, the soul still belongs to a group soul and the order of that soul's progress. The progress of any relevant matter, as explained previously, applies to man also. The only difference is that he personalizes because he is conscious awareness that he exists. Most orders below man have no knowledge of self, although there is a varying degree of knowledge, or a twilight awareness, in some of the higher orders of species. There is a constant exchange of evolved essence of the lower orders throughout the evolving order of all expressions. It percolates slowly to higher states of expression. It is aided by group souls who percolate in their turn from group soul to group soul. The essence thus evolves until it is suitable for use by man, man to angel, angel to God. It is not possible in any state of being for evolved energy to go backwards. Once it has reached a certain level of vibration, or perfection, as some like to say, it transmutes to a higher order of being. The essence of matter progresses only onward and upward, until it is spiritualized by man. It then progresses to the true plane of spirit away from the earth plane. By using everything around him, man aids spiritualization of all the lower orders. As stated earlier, the progress of man's personalized, spiritualized matter is similar to that of the lower or unspiritualized states. I am using this expression to help you differentiate between various states of being, their order and their changing from one state to another. It is essential to have this understanding clearly in your mind. You will then be able to picture, as clearly as possible, the events pertaining to the evolutionary flow of matter up to and into the state of man and beyond. In addition to being able to differentiate states of being, it is essential to recognize the similarity of all fields of progress. The principle, which not only man but all must follow, requires a flow from sphere to sphere, or plane to plane. Therefore, all reincarnation is within each plane, and not from plane to plane as held by those who argue for its existence, and disputed by those who do not believe. It is difficult to explain the next process without leaving out vital parts, or becoming so obscure as to fail to convey the purpose of this lecture. In an attempt to be as lucid as possible, I will start at the end and finish at the end. In order that the lowest order may evolve, it must and can only be served by a higher order. The soul was created for this purpose. The soul has a higher state of knowledge than the matter that forms its outer shell. It is formed by soul matter held on progressive planes and vibrates at the different rates through which it must pass. This should not be considered contradictory to the earlier statement on reincarnation. At this level, matter has changed essence and is essentially different. The spiritualized matter forms the layer of the soul. On the eventual reaching of its group soul center or Godhead, it is baptized and transmuted into self on the return circuit. This self forms around a center of knowledge of the group soul's purpose. The group center is part of a layer of an even larger group soul which will have at its center a similar center or I consciousness, ad infinitum. The central I consciousness is the Godhead of that group soul. In principle, all souls are made this way. This is how a seed forms into a flower. The sun baptizes the flower, and the new souls or seeds form and descend into the soil to start again. The flower arising from a seed is the highest evolutionary state on the earth of that matter. It is the seed spirit plane and has been prepared by organisms in the earth such as slime molds, fungi and insects for spiritualization. The plant itself is the outer layer of the soul of the flower. Above us, on the higher planes of spirit, is an organization of which we will eventually form a flower head to be baptized by the light of life. On the completion of the transmuted or evolved soul matter, you will stand at the Godhead where all that you have refined in your eons of existence as an aware being will be baptized. The refined you will have become what is called the germic self, which will have at its center its own I consciousness. It is this which makes man unique on the earth plane. It gives him his conscious awareness. This, and only this, makes him aware that he is this. It leads him ever on to God, back to the center of his creation. This is the seed of your flower. It must descend in order to evolve some of what you have left undone, or to complete a new purpose. Only it and the Godhead will know. You will continue on, ever on, into new states of being. The lecture is now at an end, my friends. I am open to your questions. The discussion went on for some time. I was impressed with the whole thing and came away from the hall more knowledgeable than when I entered. It was a little over my head, but I knew I would retain what had been said for later consideration. We came out of the building and down the steps. I turned to Chan and said, "Thanks for bringing me. Although I was never one for learning, it was not for want of trying. I just could not concentrate." Chan stopped at the last step and indicated that he would like to sit on one of the benches that surrounded the building. We walked over and made ourselves comfortable. Chan spoke, "You must study, observe and think if your spirituality is to have any worth. Consciousness is knowledge, and knowledge comes through mental effort. The intellect and reasoning powers cannot give you life, but they can open the doors for wisdom and life to enter. Spirituality divorced from wisdom becomes fanaticism. The spirit is a seed planted in the earth body, and it grows through the earth body. It unfolds with the help of the atmosphere, turns its flower towards the all-powerful sun, and sheds its fragrance on all who come within its reach. The spirit of man needs both the mental and the physical for its development. But these two alone cannot bring you into the light of spiritual life. Spirituality is not just temporal living, nor is it just dreaming. It is not only for self-upliftment, nor for dwelling solely in the transcendental. All this is included, but it is something much more. It is something so great, so powerful, that the whole of life, both on the earth plane and here, is affected by it. Experience is necessary for the progress of the spirit. It must act, it must achieve, it must attain. It cannot expand alone. It must endeavor to help those wounded in the struggle of life, to lift others with itself and strive for their upliftment as well as its own. This is the reason you must study. Your life is an experience in itself, and your experiences will push you along the road of life. 13. Now, I have to get back to my work, Chan said. There is some mopping up to be done in the encampment. You may come along, if you wish, or take more time to rest. I fell straight into his trap. I said that nothing could keep me away. Chan had a smile from ear to ear as he jumped to his feet. I hoped you would come back with me. I did not want you falling into a state of depression. I know it has been a shock to you, but you have coped very well with all that you witnessed in the dark regions of man's madness. If you are ready, we shall go. We reappeared in the encampment. Most of the inmates were gone except a few who were being led out. I noticed there were now many nurses in attendance. They too looked as if they had been in the battle. Chan led me to another part of the encampment where the lower astrals from the battle were being guarded. There must have been over 300 of them. Most of them still suffered from the effects of the fight. Others were on their knees crying out in fear of the great light, which had been inflicted on them by the Lords of Light. Many higher astrals surrounded them to ensure none escaped before they had been talked to by one of the teachers. I turned to Chan and asked, "Who will be addressing these souls?" Before Chan could answer, Brother David appeared in a clearing just 20 feet from where we stood. "How is he going to talk with so much noise?" I asked. "Wait and see," replied Chan. Brother David lifted his hand and made the sign of the cross. I then heard his voice inside my head. He was using telepathy to reach all of the lower astrals. I listened to his words. "You are fast heading towards hell. If you do not repent, you will seal your fate. Think very carefully about what I am saying before it is too late. You will not be given another opportunity such as this. Those of you who want our help, make your way to my right. You will be taken away from here and given help." Brother David paused to allow a small stream of astrals to congregate at his right side. Other astrals tried to hold them back, but the higher astrals stepped in. The lower astrals were then led away. Brother David started to speak again. "You have been given the opportunity to climb out of your hell, and you have not taken it. You have condemned yourselves to your own fate." I sensed an awesome power building up around Brother David as he concentrated his will on the remaining astrals. He spoke again, but this time the force of his will was far more intense. "In the name of the Most High and by the might of Christ, We bid you lie in the realms of night. Lie there and come no more until your astral bodies melt and fall. Then may the good Lord remember you." Brother David then lifted his hand, and a light began to emanate from his palm. The lower astrals became fearful as the light emanating from Brother David encircled them. They panicked and tried to break out of the cordon that was placed around them, but the light had a dramatic effect on them. They faded from sight, never to be seen again until the good Lord decides otherwise. They were gone within a few moments. Only the soldiers of light remained in the camp. This seemed a fitting name for us. We had battled the forces of darkness and won. I looked around for Chan but couldn't see him anywhere. I assumed he was busy. I decided to look for Harry and Jack, and turned the camp upside down in my search for them, but they were nowhere to be found. Instead, I found Chan and asked if I could be of use. "Yes, you can," he said. "Very soon we will move from here, but there are still souls who are being forced over to our life before their rightful time. We are going to leave a large party of workers to help the new souls who come to this camp of death. But what about the forces of darkness? Won't they try to attack us again?" I asked. "No," answered Chan. "They have lost this camp and will not trouble us anymore. They will build up their forces at a different location. One day there will be a great confrontation between us. Until that day, we will have the measure of them wherever we meet." Chan paused and then asked how I was feeling. "Better by the minute," I replied. "I was wondering about Harry and Jack. I have searched the camp for them. Do you know where they are? I have sent them along with some others on a mission. They should return soon," Chan replied. "Wait, I am receiving a message." Chan became silent. I had seen him go into a state of concentration on many occasions. Generally, it did not last long. True to form, Chan soon nodded and said, "There are more souls coming from the House of Death. Don't they realize that taking these people's lives is wrong?" I asked. "It is difficult to say. God only knows what drives people to do these things to their fellow countrymen. Even to Ali, they will pay for the suffering they have inflicted on these poor souls." "Right, Jim, here they come." I looked where Chan pointed. A large group walked our way with help from the soldiers of light. They had no clothes on their shattered bodies. Mothers still held children to their breasts, hoping to save them. There was no salvation for man, woman or child from this hell that existed solely for the destruction of the human race. We could liberate these souls only after death, but their mental scars would remain with them forever. Nurses met them as they passed through the opening in the wall. The look of relief when they saw the nurses' angelic faces was incredible. They were finally safe and would be looked after. I heard my name being called and looked around to find Harry immediately behind me. He almost lifted me off my feet as he pulled me to his chest. He greeted me as if I were a long-lost brother. "We have a lot to discuss," he said. "After the fight we lost contact with you. Were you all right?" "I had a little trouble," I replied and quickly changed the subject because I didn't want Harry to think I couldn't cope. "What has become of Jack?" I asked. "Oh, he'll be along soon. He's just finishing off," Harry replied. "We encountered more of the enemy than expected. They put up stiff resistance, but we soon he got the better of them and sent them off on their heels." Harry had just finished talking when Chan walked over to us. "Did everything go to plan, Harry?" he asked. "Yes, we achieved what we set out to do," Harry replied. "Good," said Chan. "When Jack returns, I have another task for the three of you." We talked for about half an hour before Jack appeared. "Good to see you again, Jim."
"Hello, Harry. We've finished the little job you gave us, Chan." It was an effort for Jack to get his words out. He looked tired and pale. The work had taken its toll, but I gave him full marks for keeping his composure like an officer. Chan had also noticed Jack's condition. He placed his hands on him and concentrated. Within moments, Jack's appearance changed. The deep ridges on his brow faded, and his old look returned.
That is better, said Chan. Next time do not let your batteries run down.